Hello, and welcome to Season 5 of Human Awareness, the official podcast for High Global, where we take you on a journey through love, intimacy, and sexuality. I'm your host, Haya, and I'm inviting our guests to open their hearts and their experience so we can all learn together. Okay, with that out of the way, let's roll tape on our interview. Hello, and welcome back to Human Awareness. I am sitting in beautiful Oakland on a beautiful warm day, and I just came inside from soaking up some sunbeams. And I am so excited to sit down with my brand new friend. Friend, what is your name and what pronouns do you use?
Hello there. Hiya. I'm Julia Tyndall, and my pronouns are she and her. And I'm calling in from very sunny and warm Sacramento today.
Glorious.
I love this warm weather.
The reason I wanted to talk to you on the podcast is that you are an expert in building community and you are extraordinarily well-traveled. And both of those two things make me very, very happy. Tell me a little bit about your background and why you're excited about community.
Yeah, they make me happy too. It's been a journey for me with both things, literally a journey. Let's start first with the community aspect, because that's building community is something super close to my heart. And if you'd have told me in my 20s, when I was an absolutely adventurous, traveler, I went around the world, worked for magazines which sent me around the world and did my travel time, that I would end up in Sacramento, California, because I'm British, by the way, that I just never guessed I would end up here and have, in a way, the job of building community. I never would have thought. But the way it all happened for me was through the yoga. And I'm a yogini, really. I've studied all branches of yoga and have a big heart for both the hatha yoga, which is the physical aspect, which most people think of as yoga. But actually, the yoga is far broader than that. And I got really excited on the aspect of jnana yoga. And it's spelled J-N-A-N-A. And jnana is the aspect of yoga for the mind, where we do self-inquiry work. And the way I came into this work was with a yogi, and he would gather us all in a large group, there'd be 50, 60 of us, and we would just bring things up that were coming up in our world. He would give us incredible wisdom and tools and techniques for dealing with these issues in our life. And when I was in my 30s and I first came across this, I was just stunned. Like, how does he know what to say to people? And how amazing that we're all wrapped with interesting curiosity about what's going on in everyone's lives. And I noticed I was a participant, but I was loving the community feeling and heart opening of those deep shares. And of course, deep share is what we do at High as well. I came to High a little bit later, but it reflected a lot of what I'd already done in this jnana yoga community. So anyway, to cut the story short, after a while, I moved away from that area and I missed the community. So I started my own group. I was terrified. What am I going to say to people? I don't think I have any wisdom. So I just would ask a lot of questions, and I'd have people get into dyads and just share their answers with each other. And I found that created heart opening, as we also know from High. It helped people feel heard and loved. And over many, many years, and I've done this over 25 years, it's created a loving, connected community here in Sacramento. So much so that people have moved from the Bay Area or other places to come and be part of it. So that's, in a long story short, what's happened in our world here to really enjoy that aspect of community creation. And I've seen how people have had relationships, they've had often work agreements together, and all kinds of incredible magical things have happened as a result of our little group. People have come, people have gone, they come back. I don't care. I'm not attached to who's there. I'm offering the space and the service. And it has blessed me over and over again so many times. So yes, that's what I've done. And from there, I've been able to bring people on retreats, take them on longer trips. And that's a whole nother branch of creating community outside the usual environment, which is another great thing to do.
So I'm super curious. I think I had like an abstract sense that yoga was more than the body. Like it feels like there's a lot of, like even in body yoga, there is an aspect of spirituality. Would you say a little bit more about like what was your discovery of that and what is that? I'm just very curious.
Sure. So the great gurus of India asked the question, who am I? It's a very profound, deep question. And for some of the jnana yogis in India with ashrams, that was the only question they ever asked. They just said, meditate on that. That's it. And awareness will arise. Well, my Western mind can't handle that. That's too much of a big leap. So for me, I needed to break that down into very gentle, easy to understand questions like, where am I complaining? How can I be more grateful? Where are my attachments? How do I criticize and self-criticize? What would love do now? That's a great question. Really great. I should use that one. What would love do now? So I developed a course, actually, of jnana yoga based on two of the books that I wrote, which have these questions in them. And they create a framework for asking really pithy, awesome questions that you can keep in your consciousness and just keep looking at how you react, how you behave, what you do. So it's a self-guided thing. And it's all about creating more self-awareness and consciousness as we go through our life. And it's a wonderful thing. We all need more of that. And having this coaching guide and framework to do it, I have found, and many of my students have found, has been really, really helpful.
You mentioned that you are creating your own community. And as somebody who is a dedicated introvert, that sounds terrifying to me. Would you say more? Like, what do you think you figured out?
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because for me, it flowed effortlessly, but other people have tried to recreate this, who've done my teacher trainings with jnana yoga, and they found it's not necessarily as easy as I have perhaps had it come to me. So the first thing that I feel is absolutely vital is creating a feeling of safety and security. And a lot of people have said to me, we love your group because we feel safe. We feel like nobody is judging us. And in fact, that's one of the jnana questions is, who's judging? What's judgment about? We really look at the difference between judgment and observation. There are a few major differences. And we practice non-judgment. And so right there, that helps everybody just relax and drop into that feeling of complete safety to be who they are and share what's coming up. So I would say that that is really number one. And number two is I'm a pretty dedicated group organizer. I'm a good communicator. I send out to my list. I communicate clearly when the gatherings are. And I was consistently here for 25 years, right up until COVID, every Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. So that consistency helped people remember, oh, there's a group tonight, I can go, and help them, just help them have a rhythm to their own lives. That Tuesday nights is community night, and we're going to do some self-inquiry. We're also going to connect and eat dinner together. And I'm lucky enough to have a pool and the weather's great here. So in the summer, we could swim first. And we always made it very sociable and fun. It wasn't just all serious business because I'm not that serious person at all. I like to connect and have fun. So I think those elements were important, and also the framework. So in my groups, we always start out with just a grounding, centering meditation just to bring everybody present. Nothing too woo-woo, just super, super easy stuff to ground. We got to be grounded. And then, you know, we would have open share time and then move into the format discussion of what our topic was that week, then move into some meditation inquiry, which led to a dyad. So the format was consistent as well. And I think people like a little bit of format.
And so, like, if I felt inspired to build community, is that what it takes? Just getting some people together and ask questions? You make it sound so easy.
I know, I make it sound so easy. Well, no, this was just this particular avenue that we chose to that worked well. But I can give you so many ideas of other ways to create community. Maybe
please
we should
do.
Talk about that
yeah,
now.
Let's do it.
Because a lot of people are like, I don't want to do all that business. That sounds way too difficult and serious. And besides, you kind of need a little training to do some of that. So just for some ideas for y'all, if you would, you know, if you're thinking, I'd love to create more community, but I just don't know how to do it. The first objection is a lot of people say, oh, my house is too small to have people. So, okay, how about a picnic in the park? Or how about a meeting for a hike somewhere? And you have to not be attached to how many people come. It may be one or two come. You have to be not attached to who they are. You just open your heart to whoever shows up. Your job is to create them, to create the activity, hold the space and integrity. And in other words, that means show up. Do not be late. Show up. And then just go with whatever flow is there. So I think there's always ways where people can send out an email. I mean, you've got this fantastic NorCal High list. You can always say, who's up for a kayak on the river or something? You know, there's always ways to people to find each other through the wonderful high organization if they want to do that. So that's some ideas for doing things outside of your own living room. But if you do have a living room that you'd like to invite people to, you could do things like a salon afternoon, and it could be a tea time. I'm British. I love my tea time. You could do a theme like we're going to do a British style tea and go and get some scones and jam and cream or something. And I invite people for a tea. That's not expensive to do. People could maybe bring something of their own to share too. And you just have a relaxed tea time and chat maybe. Or one of the other things I've done is I've done fundraisers. Right now I'm doing a fundraiser for a family in Sri Lanka. This guy was my guide on one of my trips to Sri Lanka. And then after COVID, that country fell apart and he really needed help. So we've been helping. And I love to do fundraisers. And my gosh, it could be anything at all. It could be a potluck dinner where you're just, everyone comes and pitches in a bit of money. Or I don't know. You can think of all kinds of things that you could do for a fundraiser. But I think that's a nice way to draw people together for a good cause as well. Or the other thing is, I've done backyard concerts, and that's really fun. You find somebody in your community who likes to play guitar maybe or sing, and you say, would you like to come to my backyard if you have one? And let's do a concert. Now, that could be a fundraising idea, or it could just be something to support that musician. So, yeah, or it doesn't have to be in your backyard. I've had people come and do that in my living room. So many ways where we can be creative and we can invite people to come together, because that's what it's about, people coming together. I think we all need it desperately, especially yeah. People who live on their own. And I know a lot of people who, like me, live on their own. And maybe we don't have family nearby. So we really need that sense of community in our world. And sometimes if we can't find it through other people, we've got to step up and be the ones to do it. So I hope I'm inspiring some people with some good ideas that are practical, you know?
I think you inspire such a, get off your butt and do the thing energy, which I...
That's sort of me, yeah.
Which I find really inspiring and really like, like, I feel like in my own mind, like when it comes to community or even making new friends, it's like one of those, oh, but what if... Like, what if it isn't good enough? Or, that voice shows up very quickly. And,
I had that voice. I had that voice, but I did it anyway, because the desire for what I wanted was stronger than my self-criticism. And
that's
so
beautiful.
I didn't get it right. I mean, I probably said some stupid things when I first started holding my wisdom circle groups, you know. But it didn't matter. People still came, and more came, but it gathered momentum. The consistency allowed it to gather momentum. And it took off from there. So I think you have to just let go of any idea of, oh, it may not be very good. Nobody might come. You're right. Nobody might come. But at least you tried. Or you may make a wonderful new friend. Most of the best friends I have right now in my world all came through my group. Pretty much every single one of them. I can't even imagine my world without those people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I suppose, you know, there's also the thing of maybe you don't have to start something yourself. There are other people doing what you're doing, and it's possible to join another community.
You bet. I mean, there's meetups. Meetups are great. Mm-hmm. I've got 3 meetups myself. You know, I do. Actually, 2 of them are travel meetups, and one's for my British and Commonwealth friends so we can get together and speak the same language.
Wonderful. I also lived in the UK for a long time. And yeah. The old joke of we're divided by a common language is,
right.
I feel like culturally, I run into, like, especially if you get into intimate relationships or in very close friendships, it is so easy to believe that what I say is received the way I meant it, right? And sometimes you find cultural differences that can run pretty deep.
Yes. Well, I've lived here for 35 years. I edit my conversation unless I'm around English people, in which case we just let it all flow out. And a lot of Americans would stand around and go, what the hell are they talking about?
I love that. You've suggested a couple of times that, obviously, you mentioned Sri Lanka, you've mentioned travel. Would you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure.
I love seeing bits of the world, and I would love to know how this shows up for you in your life.
Right. Well, thank you for asking me. So, interestingly, you know, COVID stopped everything. And so I'd always been a heartfelt traveler. I love discovering all parts of the world, all peoples. I feel I'm a world citizen, not a citizen of any one country. And it's given me great pleasure over the years to share my love of places and foreign cultures with other people. Again, being British, I think I started traveling in my teens. You don't even want to know the crazy things I did. I hitchhiked around Africa when I was 19 years old, all on my own. I've done some crazy stuff. But
that sounds
the
like
good
an
thing
incredible
is,
adventure.
I know. Yeah. Nowadays, we go a little differently. It's much more organized. But I've had this love of travel. And over the years, I've expanded these yoga vacations. I used to do yoga, as I say, yoga retreats. And then there's yoga vacations in Hawaii, Mexico, Costa Rica. And now I'm finding I'm in my 60s and my age group is wanting more exotic travel, further away places, bucket list places as we all get older. A lot of people are retired. They want to travel. So I've expanded my trips quite a lot now, and I'm doing more of them and taking people to those sorts of bucket list destinations like a safari in Kenya, the Egyptian pyramids. Those are both coming up next year. We're going to hire a private boat and cruise around the Turkish coast in 2025. We do a fabulous tour around South Africa. Bali is one of my favorites. I think I've been to Bali 25 times. I'm actually wearing Balinese clothes right now. And I take people there pretty much every year, and it's always sold out. And it's such a joy for me to not only share my favorite places on the planet with my friends, because everybody becomes friends, but also to watch how people connect in this mini temporary community, for the time we're together. And if we have 11, 12 days together as a group, deep friendships form. I've had people get married from meeting on my trips.
Amazing.
I've had so many wonderful connections happen with people who become close friends. And most of the time, because it's always these private trips, so they're people I know or people that come through maybe the high world and their friends of friends. So I will say, well, most of the people are coming from Sacramento or Bay Area, so you can all travel together. You can meet up afterwards. You can continue the connection. And they do. And they often come in a little pod and say, well, we 4 want to come with you somewhere else. Where can we go? You know, and so they get really friendly with some travel buddies. And for so many, especially single people, who do you go on holiday with? You don't want to just join some random tour. You don't know who's going to be there. You may not connect with any of them. You'd feel lonely. But when you come with me, it's like-minded people and heart-open people. And it's really fun. So I found a little niche there with what I do, I think.
Yeah.
I'm having a great time taking people around the world right now. This year, we went to South Africa, Tanzania, Egypt, Jordan, Morocco, Switzerland. That's this
amazing.
Year already.
Amazing. That's amazing. And so I'm hearing you love taking people on adventures or on experiences.
Yeah.
And I see in you that you love building community. And you've mentioned a couple of times that love seems to happen near you.
It's amazing how often that happens, actually.
Right.
I'm curious. Heart workshop. We open up, right?
Yeah. And is there something about, like, I guess my question is there something about what you're doing that is like facilitating that? Or is it just you provide fertile soil and people just... fall into a sense of connection and vulnerability?
I'd say it's the latter more, the fertile soil. Yeah. I will say I do hold an energetic bubble of harmony for the group. Mm-hmm. And I'm very energetically aware of what's going on. If there's anything that's a little squirrely, I will try to go in and sort it out quickly so that there's harmony. I mean, I'm a quadruple Libran, so harmony is my thing. You know, Librans are great diplomats. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite good at that. And I consciously hold a space, even for a number of days, for everybody to be open-hearted and be loving and connect. So it is a conscious decision on my part. But then other than that, people will do what they do. And I do think that beautiful, luxurious environments where they're getting pampered. I mean, like in Bali, you can get massages for $5 an hour. Mm-hmm. Oh, and they're quite nice, you know, and you just have this sense of feeling so, so pampered. And that makes us feel good, especially as ladies. We love all that stuff. And then feeling good, when we feel good, we're more open and we connect better.
That's beautiful.
Then there's the joy of discovery, new places. I think it makes an aliveness happen for everybody. It makes me feel alive. That's one of the reasons I travel. I want to discover the new, the unexpected, the exciting, and the beauty of what's there in the world.
Yeah.
And what a joy to share.
Do you think it's important to go far?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, no. I mean, you can discover things in our own backyard, which are wonderful, beautiful, and all of that. But I do think there is something to be said of having a complete change of environment. Mm-hmm. I think it changes people's mindset. And I actually watch people's minds. Sometimes when they arrive somewhere completely different, there's that little bit of culture shock and they feel a little bit discombobulated the first day or two. And I watch people get a little disoriented. Maybe they don't track what I'm describing or saying. They have to ask me the same question two or three times sometimes. And I have total compassion for that because I understand not only are you a bit jet lagged, but you're in this brand new place and it's all so new. Your brain is having a hard time just absorbing it all. But that is the beauty in a way, to be in this different environment and just discovering who you are in a brand new place. And sometimes you discover you're somebody different.
Yeah, absolutely. I always observe that when I'm in places where I don't have my routines, I don't have my everything, it invites a different level of neuroplasticity. I have to work harder out how to buy a thing, or I have to work harder to get directions. And especially if I'm in countries that have non-Latin languages, right? I was in Thailand for about a year and I was like holding up a sign going like, do those squiggles match these squiggles? I don't know, right? But your brain has to work in a completely different way.
Yes, it does.
And I think that really opens up for a different kind of curiosity almost.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got a different currency for one thing. Luckily, and so we are so lucky that we speak English as our mother tongue pretty much everywhere in the world now, at least in tourism. The English is excellent and we don't have a problem with language. But you're right. I do feel it changes the brain in a way that makes us feel much more alive. And so often people tell me they come home and then they get over the jet lag and then they just feel a little bit flat because we've had this incredible time. And then there's, the laundry and the bills. And that's when I say, well, then come and reconnect. Come up here. I'm doing a Tuesday night gathering. I'm still doing once a month Jnana groups even now. We've cut them down from weekly to monthly at this point. But maybe we're doing, like, I'm doing a gathering at Harbin in September for friends who are on my list. And it's just something casual, but at least we're getting people together. There's mm-hmm. another good idea, by the way. I just did a gathering up at Sierra Hot Springs, and it wasn't anything I wasn't like leading a retreat because nowhere, they won't let us do it right now because they're so understaffed, unfortunately. But I said, I'm going to be there for 2 nights. Who wants to come and join me? And some people came up and we had dinner together and soaked and hiked and had a lovely time. Harbin's down the road. You can do that as well. So that's another way to go off your own location but just invite community to gather.
As you're speaking, I am curious about something that came up for me. It's like mm-hmm. you mentioned that, in Bali, the massages were like super affordable and travel is enriching and beautiful and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And in the back of my head, I'm kind of a little bit curious if in the gratitude of receiving all the gifts of travel and such, if privilege shows up for you at all, if that is something that you are,
of course,
like, how does that show up for you?
Yeah. We are incredibly privileged to be able to leave our country at all and to have the money to be able to go and spend on frivolous things, which essentially travel's a frivolous thing. So you're absolutely right to point that out. We're extremely privileged. And so for me, I always encourage a giving back. And there's ways to do that while we're on the journey, certainly with reciprocating those beautiful Balinese smiles and courtesies that we're always polite and kind. But also, let's be generous when we tip. Do you know mm-hmm. those little girls that do the massages in Bali? They're often very young. They make sometimes as little as 25 cents per massage. And everything else goes to the salon owner. So when we give them a nice tip, that is huge for them. That will feed their family for a day or two. So I try to make people very mindful about tipping well, being generous and kind and in all ways. And then there are other levels that we give back. As I say, I've had my whole community support my Sri Lankan tour guide and his family during this difficult time post-COVID. And we've also supported an orphanage in Thailand and an orphanage in Nepal. And these are places where, we've been to actually visit them. And so we have a direct connection with those people. And then there's the option to continue to do that even once we've gone home. So I do think it's extremely important to honor the fact that, yes, to recognize we are privileged and how can we give back even beyond the journey?
Yeah. And I think that kind of echoes back to one of the big questions you kept asking yourself, which is like, who are you?
Yeah.
Right. There is a way of traveling as a taker, and there's a way of traveling as somebody who is in symbiosis with the world around you. And mm-hmm. I mean, tourism in general can be very kind of double-edged sword kind of thing, but there's definitely a way of showing up better for the humans around you.
There is. We want to make the place better. I'll give Bali as another example because it's such a place close to my heart. But if you remember years and years ago, there was a bombing in Kuta in Bali. A lot of Australian young people were killed. It was very tragic. And so for a long time, nobody went to Bali. We went a few months after, and the people were so desperate to see us and so grateful to see us as tourists there to spend our money and be there. I mean, the taxi drivers would cry. Thank you for coming. Even after COVID, similar thing. They were so grateful to have us come back. And it was quite difficult getting into Bali during even last year. We had to jump through quite a few hoops, which thankfully now have gone. But tourism was not back even last October. And the people were having difficulty because their entire island lives on, I mean, there is some agriculture, but mostly tourism. Our very presence there was a blessing to them. And again, let's be more generous. These people are really needing some financial help. So we'll spread it around. And that's what we did. And we were greeted with such warmth. Oh my gosh, I have this wonderful hotel in just outside Ubud in the rainforest. It's a boutique hotel. There's more staff and guests, and we pretty much take the whole place. And when we walked up the steps last year, and it had been 3 years since we'd been, all the staff were just weeping, like, oh, thank you that you're back. And we're so happy to see you. I mean, it's that kind of relationship that I have with those people, and they extend to the groups. And we all cried and we all hugged, and it was so beautiful. Mm. So that kind of tourism is heartfelt, you know,
yeah.
It's boutique, if you like. And that's what I do, because it makes me happy.
Gosh, absolutely. I'm curious. It feels like travel and exchange of ideas and culture is a big part of your life. What was the pandemic like for you?
Very interesting. Well, I guess my soul decided that I should really stop. So it wasn't just that the pandemic stopped me moving, but I managed to drop a pole on my head. Don't ask. I reached up, grab a pole, it fell on my head, and I had a head injury for 6 months and actually couldn't move. My whole body shut down, two shoulders froze, two hips froze, and I was just grounded, couldn't go anywhere. I slept a lot as the head injury recovered. It's like a minor concussion, but it did a number on me, interestingly. And the universe just wanted me to reset myself. I just meditated a lot. I was quiet. I just tottered around the house. And 6 months later, I began to get better and move again and get back to my yoga. And it really took a 2-year recovery time, I would say. But I started to travel again slowly by about January 2021. There were some places we could go, and I went with a few friends. So little by little, I went back to doing some very small things. But yes, it was an interesting time of a complete reset for me personally.
Yeah. Well, I suppose if there was going to be a time for a reset, that
was
the
perfect time. I know. If you want to drop a pole on your head, do it during a pandemic.
Coincided with the pandemic.
Yeah. I did it in May. So it was right just as we could after we locked down.
Yeah. Goodness. That's rare advice, to be fair, but
it's pretty rare. You may not need it, but you know.
What brings you joy?
This brings me joy. It's lovely to talk to you, and you have beautiful questions. I really appreciate them. What brings me joy is bringing other people joy, for one thing. What brings me joy is the great outdoors, the great nature, the beauty of this incredible creation. Snorkeling and diving. I'm a scuba dive girl. I love going to play with the fish. That brings me immense joy. And as I've already mentioned, that joy of discovery, and even more discovering with my friends. And being with lovely people brings me great joy. Oh, and food. Let's not forget food. All my friends who are listening will be thinking, talk about the food, because they know.
Yeah, no, for sure. What is the change you want to be in the world?
Deep question. The change I want to be. The change I already am is a person who helps bring people to a higher consciousness. And I would encourage anyone to look at my books, by the way. They're all on Amazon. I've got 5 of them. And the change I want to be is also connecting people of different cultures. So when we bring our culture to a different country and there's that beautiful sharing that takes place, that does create change. And it may create change on individual levels, but I believe those individual changes ripple out and affect the greater world, or the greater oneness, or whatever you want to say. So yeah, my change is about helping people open to more of who they truly are. And in that place, the ripple is big.
The ripple is big. I think that is a beautiful place to end.
Ah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. It's been a delight.
Thank you so much for joining us for our episode today. If you like the topics of the High podcast, check out our workshops. We do them online and in person. Learn more on high.org. That is HAI.org. See you soon.